Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Don't you have any homework tonight? Calvin's mom asked, plunking the dinner plates down on the table. I don't see any books or papers around here.
Nah, don't worry about it,
14-year-old Calvin replied. I'll just do it in school tomorrow.
Tomorrow? His mom almost dropped the soup ladle. What exactly is wrong with your doing it tonight, young man?
Well, Calvin began, there weren't enough books for all the kids in the class, so I'm doing my work tomorrow like Ben, Kayla, and Marcus.
Again? His mom began to roll her eyes in dismay. First, there were not enough math books. Then that English teacher for your class never showed up and they had to combine sections. And now there's a shortage of history books? Where will it end?
Hey, that's not so bad. At Delmore's school, they had a guy with a knife show up because there was some fight over a jacket or something. Now that was trouble.
From a parent's perspective, what can be done to help improve inner city schools? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has had experience with several different school systems and the kinds of problems they present. Dr. Steve Selesnow is a partner in Venture Philanthropy Partners, a nonprofit organization working to serve the developmental and learning needs of low-income families in the nation's capital metropolitan area. He spent nearly 30 years in public education, serving as deputy superintendent in the Montgomery County, Maryland public school system, and then as chief of staff for the Washington, D.C. public schools. An ardent leader of change and an effective manager of complex educational organizations, Dr. Selesnow is passionate and committed to improving the lives of children of low-income families. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Selesnow.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
What do you see as the biggest problem for inner city schools?
Well, I think that the problem really for schools in most major cities in this country has been a lack of investment over probably the last 4 or 5 decades. And that has kind of accumulated, if you will, to the point where it will require huge sums of money to bring the cities and their schools back up to where they were 50, 60 years ago. And I say that because in this country, the premier public schools in the nation were all in large cities, in New York, in Washington, in Boston, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco. Those were the schools of choice for people. But over the years, as many different social issues arose in cities, cities chose to invest less and less in their kids, and today we're suffering the consequences. So the biggest problem, I think, for cities is to begin looking at ways to reinvest in children in those cities and to assure that they have the same kinds of resources that kids in suburban areas have. I'd also say that the same has been true to some extent in rural areas, where there are great needs in rural schools for additional resources. And because those schools typically are smaller, and in smaller communities, it's much harder for them to generate the resources. So in many ways, inner city and rural schools face some of the same problems.
It's funny, though, in the metropolitan area that we're in at this moment, we hear so much about lots of money being thrown at the system, more than in the surrounding suburban areas. How does that fit?
It's really an interesting dilemma, and having served in both what would be typically called a large suburban system and then right next door a large urban system, that I found there were a great deal of untruths promoted in the press and in the media and in just public discourse. The fact is that, for example, Washington, D.C., as many have said, and because it's the nation's capital, many write about it, spends more per pupil than any other school district in America, which is absolutely untrue. So you get a lot of misinformation out there. In fact, Washington, D.C. is third in line after Arlington and Alexandria, Virginia. But you don't often hear that. And in fact, there are many other school districts that spend more. Part of the problem, and that's part of the problem that I mentioned earlier, is that we need to spend more of our time and attention focusing on what the real needs and the real costs of urban schools. I often said to people here in Washington that when the engine light on your car goes on and you let it run for 65 years, eventually your engine stops working, your windshield and windows get broken, and your tires go flat. You don't just get to snap your fingers and have that car run again. It's going to cost a lot of money to make that car work. And that means buying new tires, replacing the windshield, putting in a new engine. that's going to be more expensive than somebody who had a car for 65 years and took it to the shop every 3 months and never let the engine light go on and made those small investments over time to make sure the car ran. Big cities never did that. And therefore, the engine lights came on, nobody paid attention, and all of a sudden you have deteriorating facilities, lack of accumulated supplies and materials, no investment in teacher training. And so it will cost more for inner city schools and urban school systems and big cities to bring their schools to the level that most suburban communities have been funding for many, many years.
So we're really playing a game of catch-up big time.
Right. We're playing a game of catch-up. And as we know, in large cities, there are many more needs. If you were to compare a city of 500,000 people with a suburban area with 500,000 people, you'll find in the city they spend more on police, they spend more on fire, they spend more on human services than a neighboring suburban community because the needs are greater in those cities. I often ask, why then should they pay less than a suburban community on their children if they're in that same community that has to pay so much more for all the other services and have so many more police officers and so many more judicial workers and healthcare workers and other things? Because cities have many more needs than the suburban areas, and we have to recognize that those needs play out in school buildings as well.
If you were a parent starting your child in an inner city school, what would you want to keep in mind?
Well, first and foremost, schools are great because parents make them great. Mm-hmm. And I would say the first thing, and one of the things that I learned way back 30 years ago when I first started teaching, is that if you don't have demanding parents who are in that school every day, that school will get complacent and will not perform as well as if parents in schools where parents are very demanding. So first and foremost is you have to demand quality from your schools. You have to be an ardent advocate for your child. It is often hard to do, but I would encourage every parent to stand and fight for their kids in their schools. If you're not happy with your child's teacher, if you're not happy with the principal, or you would like more materials or more programs, you have to advocate for that. Don't let a problem simmer for your child at all in a school. So the first and most important thing is to stay involved. The next thing is to make sure your neighbors stay involved, that a school is a reflection of the community. And when parents get together in groups and work on behalf of their schools can be great. And in most communities where you see great schools, you see a very strong, demanding parent community.
What would you say to parents who feel that their education was pretty deficient, or they came from another culture and they're not necessarily comfortable with this educational system, so they're very reluctant to show up and demand anything?
In some cases, they speak a different language, and they're very self-conscious about trying to make their needs known or their child's needs.
That's a very common problem. And in America now, it's a common problem in many school districts around the country where there are large numbers of families who speak other languages, who are new Americans learning to speak English or come from countries where you never questioned anyone in school. In America, it's different. In America, all parents have the right to advocate for their children. And while that might be different coming from another culture, every parent, and I've done this over the years in terms of training parents, to say you have a right to ask questions. Doesn't mean you come in and yell and scream and carry on with the teacher, but you have a right to know what's happening to your child in that school. You have a right to know what's in their records. You have a right to question all the members of a school staff on what their program is for your child. Often, you'll find in most districts, if, for example, if there are parents, or if any of the listeners know parents who speak other languages, there are often translators and staff whose job it is to reach out to the community and make sure those parents who are coming from different cultures have an advocate or somebody to help them navigate through that school system. I would also say that often parents come into school with the experiences they had as a child. And if they were like me, I went into education because I didn't have such great experiences in school. And I decided to become an educator because I wanted them to be different for kids. I would say to parents, even if your experiences were not positive experiences in school, if you had teachers who didn't treat you fairly, or didn't treat you positively, or didn't help you read to the level you were capable of, do not let that stop you from going and advocating for your child. And in fact, all the more reason to go in to make sure your child does not have the same experience that you have.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on inner city schools.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Steve Sellers now about inner city schools. What kinds of experiences have you had with inner city schools that you wish more parents could know about?
Well, what I would say is that there are far more great schools and great teachers in big cities than most people realize. As many know, Washington, D.C. gets a lot of attention as not a very well-performing school district. And some of that criticism is very well justified for a lot of reasons. But I will say when I began work there, I saw some of the most amazing teachers and some of the most amazing schools I had seen anywhere in this country. And so in every city, do not let a broad brush dictate or determine whether your neighborhood school is good or bad. The best way to find out is to go in there yourself and take a look. And you have a right to do that as a parent. That if you've moved into a neighborhood or prior to making a decision to move into a neighborhood, you have a right to go to that neighborhood school to take a look at it, to determine if it has the right climate for your child.
Let's make it clear how a parent would go about doing that.
Absolutely. The first thing they could do is call the school and schedule an appointment with the principal. The first thing I would tell a parent is if they were reluctant to schedule an appointment with you, then that should be your first question about that school, because it is the principal's responsibility to meet with every parent whenever that parent seeks a meeting. Now, sometimes schools are very busy places, and if they're large schools, there may be an assistant principal. So that would certainly be an appropriate way to begin. But if you call the school and you're told, oh, no, we can't meet with you, that's an indicator that this is not a school that is involving parents, and that would be a first sign to begin questioning. Now, on the other side, the benefit of the doubt, it might have been a bad day. You might have gotten on the end of the line a substitute secretary. Who knows? I would still go in and visit the school, and I would still persist, because most parents want their kids to go to schools within their communities. But that's the first step to take. If, for example, you call and you simply cannot get in, at that point, I would contact and I would call the superintendent's office of the school system. I would not try to figure out a way to navigate the bureaucracy of big school systems. I'd call right to the superintendent's office. And this is what typically happens. You'll call. You will not reach the superintendent, but you'll reach somebody who will refer you to the right administrator who should be able to get you what you need in that particular school. You also have a right to know if in your particular community you have a choice of schools. It may not be your neighborhood school, which is your only school to go to. You may have a choice of any other school in the city. You may have a choice of charter schools. So you can call the information office or the superintendent's office and find that out.
Maybe before we go any further, do you want to explain what a charter school is?
Oh, yes. A charter school in many cities across the country, charter schools have over the last 10 years or so begun to flourish, particularly in big cities. Charter schools are public schools that parents are entitled to send their kids to, that operate outside of the administrative structure of the major school system. So if you were in New York, there's the New York City public schools, but there are also public charter schools. If you're in Washington, D.C., there are the District of Columbia public schools, but there are also about 40 different charter schools. So you have the right to send your child to the public school system or the public charter schools. And you should investigate what those options are and what those choices you have as a parent. Charter schools are not bound by the administration of the system, by the unions that might represent teachers in the large system. So they're free from a lot of the traditional trappings of the large school systems.
What about curricula?
They typically create their own curricula. Often, parents will have a range of choices. You can find in some charter schools very structured, very rigid programs if parents think that's best for their kids. You might find programs that focus in the arts or at high school, some that focus in law or technology. So it's really necessary to find out what those range of options are for you as a parent in that city.
Is this a situation where kids have to apply in some way?
Typically, for charter schools, you apply. In most cities, it's a lottery. So that if you're applying to a charter school and there are more kids than seats available, they typically do a blind lottery so that you are you have an equal shot of getting your child in that school.
And then once your child's in there, that you don't have to go through the lottery again.
You don't. Once your child is in that school, that selection is good for the entire time you want your child there. Typically, as you leave elementary school to a middle or junior high or to a high school, then you would apply again. Some charter schools are K-12. Some are K-8, some are K-5. Some are just high schools. You really have to do some work to investigate those options.
If you were to pick the thing that inner city schools need most, what would it be?
I would say, and I'm not trying to play to the audience here, but I found this in my experience, and this is universal. It's an involved and engaged parent community. And I say that because the funders of public schools, which are typically elected officials, have to respond to what their voters want. If parents are engaged in their public schools and are demanding of their elected officials of what they want in terms of the kinds of buildings, the kinds of teachers, the kinds of resources, then those elected officials will provide those resources. If parents do not come together in support of their children and their schools, then elected officials can really act with impunity or act with priorities set by others who may not be interested in the public schools. So first and foremost, public schools need parent support, and that parent support belongs first in the neighborhood school, whether it's elementary, middle, junior, or high school. Parents have to be engaged and supportive. Also, community members have to stay part of that school. So if you live next door to a retired person that may have already sent their kids to the same school that you're sending your kids to, you pay long-term for public education. It's not just for the years your kids are in school. It's a lifetime investment as a citizen. And as schools go, so do communities. Many people think as communities go, so go schools. I argue is when you keep a school healthy and vibrant, you keep the community in that school and the community demanding those same services everywhere within that community. So first and foremost, they need parental support. They need great teachers in every classroom and great principals. I would tell any parent, concentrate on that first. Having a great teacher in a classroom and a great principal, the combination of those two can transcend any problems that you hear or read about or see on the news about the superintendent or the school board or the central bureaucracy. If you concentrate on making sure your kids have those two, a great teacher and a great principal, they can fix pretty much anything a school faces.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on inner city schools.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Steve Selesnow about inner city schools. Speaking as a parent who doesn't feel particularly empowered to change the structure, how do you make sure there's a great principal and great teachers?
That's an excellent question. First, it means that you have to be involved and know what's happening in your child's classroom. You have to be a person in that school whom the principal knows and the teacher knows. Part of what makes a great teacher and a great principal is knowing that their parents have very high expectations for them and that they have high expectations for their kids. If then you find that the principal or the teacher is not delivering, then that's the point in time where you need to talk to your local school board members. Or if your school system is run by the mayor, contacting the mayor or contacting the superintendent's office. Many people may not believe this, but when a community gets together and says, we've worked with this principal and we no longer find this principal effective, school systems do listen. It's not an easy thing to do, and I'm not an advocate for overthrowing principals if you don't like them. I would always tell parents to work with that principal, but if in time you find that that principal or those teachers are not performing well, you have to make others aware of it. I've dealt with that in many years dealing with parents, and I found in my career, and I've said this often publicly, 99% of the time parents know when they have a good teacher and a good principal, and they also know when they have a bad teacher and a bad principal. And everybody, if they want to be honest with themselves, they know that parents, no matter who they are, no matter what kind of community they live in, they know when that school's not producing. And if the school system is not responding, they need to step up and let others know.
What do students in inner city schools need?
They need a staff at that school that first and foremost respects them and loves them and has extremely high expectations for them and has very low tolerance for failure.
And you can't fool kids.
Fool kids. Yeah. And the most important thing is that everybody in that school believe every child can learn at high rates. And if you don't have that, I don't care how good the training is, I don't care how good the books are, the curriculum or the building, kids will not achieve at the level they're capable of achieving. And a climate of respect toward kids will lead kids to respect the staff. And I've seen it in every community.
Dr. Sellers, now what have you found helpful to prepare inner city children for their first school experiences?
It really begins as soon as you know you're having a child. And I would say, even although this is kind of crazy, even before the child's born, I'd start reading to them. And certainly many parents think it's crazy to read to a brand new baby or an infant, but I would begin reading right away, because the research shows that infants pick up on the voice and the tone of the parents, the rhythm of the voice, and certainly reading begins to build within the cognitive development of the child the skills to be readers. I have always found that if kids are reading and reading fluently, they become great writers and they become great thinkers. And I would start as a parent and set a simple goal of reading one book a day to your child as soon as they're born, and continue that and make that a pattern and a habit of life as long as you can until your child is reading their books alone. And then I still wouldn't stop, because I would make reading a part of the culture of the family. That is the single most important thing a parent can do, whether you choose to send your child to a daycare or childcare. If you have somebody who is looking after your child or selecting a nursery school, make sure that reading is a fundamental part of your child's life from the day they're born.
Can you talk a little bit about the kinds of books that parents can choose when we're talking about reading to very young children, infants and toddlers, and then the ones who are squirmy and who don't want to sit for very long and so on?
You can read in bits and pieces. So if you have a squirmy child that doesn't want to sit in your lap, read two or three pages. You are the best judge of how long. And then come back later and read two or three more. And then come back later and read two or three. Don't feel you have to read the whole book at one time. For young children, you know, these are age-old things. Nursery rhymes, rhythmic stories. Modulate and change your voice. That kind of critical play with a child makes a huge difference in terms of their cognitive development. So make it fun for yourself, too. And sometimes kids like to have the same book read to them a million times. If they want to hear it, read it. Don't think you have to read, you know, Chaucer's classics or Canterbury Tales or whatever to your child as an infant. Read books that they smile to, that they coo to, that they laugh about, that they frown about, and keep picking until you find the right ones. And they will tell you what they like.
In addition to which, there are now so many wonderful books that are cloth books or different fabrics, so that you can have the tactile and the visual part.
Very important. Kids love not only to look at books and hear books, but to feel books. Have them turn the page with you. And it is the single most important thing you can get your child to do.
Dr. Sellers, now what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to learn more about some of the issues involved in city education?
Well, one of the most important things that I would say to parents, and this is even before you have kids in school and all the way up through high school, is to get involved with your local PTA. Most cities have citywide PTAs. You can contact that citywide PTA office. You can find out who are the parents who are PTA members in your local schools. Those are great people to get to know even before your kids enter that school. They can kind of tell you what that school is about, what the issues are, what help they need. That's first and foremost. You should know who's on your school board, and you should get involved in the process of electing school board members. You should know if, for example, if your mayor is in charge of schools, what the issues the mayor is working on and his or her superintendent. So get involved in your community with respect to the schools, and also go on the website of the National PTA. They'll give you many, many, many resources. As far as things to read, there's a book that really struck me years ago by a writer who's written about education, and I would tell any parent to read anything he's written, Jonathan Kozol, that's K-O-Z-O-L. There was a book he wrote a few years ago about urban school systems called Savage Inequalities. And it is a very moving story of several cities, large and small, around the country. And it kind of goes back to the story I told about the engine light going on. And he tells the story of what happened to schools in large cities and mid-sized cities in the country. It's a very important book to read for any parent to help them understand what they might need to do as a parent in that community to raise the expectations for their kids in their schools.
Well, you have certainly done a lot for all of us to help us raise some expectations and give us some marching orders so we can start maybe trying to help turn things around a little bit. Dr. Steve Sellers, now we are so fortunate to have had you with us today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller today is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 231. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective programs. Parents' Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today, it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send your checks or money orders to Parents' Perspective Incorporated, Post Office, Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Post Office, Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. And thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.